Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love.
Hello, Sherry.
Post-holiday weekend.
I know. Are you recovered?
Ish.
You did it up.
I sort of. You know what? I will say I did it up during the day, which is seems like it might be my new thing. And every night I was in bed by like 9:30 or 10. So I feel rested.
That's late for me these days.
Oh, gosh. Look at us, Burl.
I'm actually naturally more of a night owl. Well, we'll get into that.
We are.
At some point. But we do have some news from your beat.
Well, let's talk about our special guest just because.
Oh, yeah, for
just
sure.
Because. Like, just a couple weeks ago, we were like, what are we going to talk about? There just didn't seem to be any, like, we do like to talk about hard news, political news. There just didn't seem to be a lot, like maybe like a month ago. And now there's many, many things to pick from. But our special guest today is Paris Parker, and she's coming to us. She's the head of HR from Paycor, which made news last week because it's coming into the old Saks building. So we wanted to kind of catch up, and they're really a growing company. We're lucky to have them here in Cincinnati, and they're going to help make our urban core vibrant. So I'm excited to talk to her.
And they already have a significant presence downtown because the former Paul Brown Stadium is now Paycor Stadium.
It is.
So you can't breeze through downtown without seeing the name Paycor. So
it is I think it's because of where we're located. Of course, it's our backdrop. People have seen pictures and we talk about it. It's literally the only thing that has a new name that I actually call by its new name. Cause I'm also, in addition to going to bed early, I also call everything by its previous iteration name as one does, but I call the stadium Paycor.
I still hear a lot of people say Paycor Stadium.
Yes.
But I run into people that still call Heritage Bank Center Riverfront Coliseum. So,
okay. So I call it U.S. Bank Arena.
And that's jumping back about, three or four names. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to remember them now. So you had Riverfront Coliseum, The Crown, right?
This is pre-me.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that it was kind of called The Crown. And then what was it right before Heritage Bank Center?
U.S. Bank Arena.
U.S. Bank Arena.
And it was that for a long time.
Right. And I'm probably missing one. So, yes. I think you're right, though. I think that it was such a big deal when they acquired the naming rights.
Well, I look at it all day.
Oh, yeah. We're staring at it right now outside of the window of our lavishly appointed studio high atop Plum Street. So, all right. So, news of the day off your beat, which I think is pretty significant, and we've talked about this a little bit, but now let's just get down to it. Tell me about Connected Communities. Where are we? What is going on? It looks like this is racing toward a vote, and it's going to be
next week. I think the first week of June, it's expected to have a vote. You know, Connected Communities is a zoning overhaul. If somebody said last year that you would care this much about zoning, I would be like, you're lying to me, but I do care. It's very important to the city. It is a big change in how developers are going to be able to make things dense. It's all about density and building places so people have places to live and the city can grow.
Usually when there's a zoning issue, it involves like a specific parcel or a variance or something like that. This is even though it's zoning and it's not the sexiest topic, it is going to have wide reaching impact because we're changing, if this goes through, the fundamental, let's call it sort of the ground rules for development in the city.
And the key is it's all by business districts or the 24-hour transit routes that kind of cut across the city north and south, east and west. So it's a little bit more limited than everywhere in the city, but it does have a swath out from those things, either a quarter mile or a half a mile, and people are concerned.
And affecting various neighborhoods.
Yes.
So for the person who has no idea what we're talking about, other than zoning, give me the elevator pitch on why the city wants to do this.
It's the zoning code now is geared towards single family housing. We are already a city of renters. And so the zoning code was really it's in place as it is now to make sure that single family homes can be built or stay single family homes. But anybody who wants to do something different with a parcel of land has to jump through 9,000 hoops. And honestly, over the years when I've written about corruption, I've actually heard from developers this is a way to enter. This is how corruption actually entered into the city, because there was a lot of different steps that needed to get done, where you would have to talk to a council member, or you would have to, you know, their entry, like just all of these different steps. And it alleviates those steps. It makes it easier to develop more dense units. That is the goal of it. And so there's less steps.
So rather than having zoning that mandates a single family standalone structure.
And if you wanted to do something, you'd have to get a million different approvals to do anything different than single family.
Now they're going to make multifamily structures part of the standard zoning for these neighborhoods.
Yes. And the mayor talks a lot about row houses being part of this. But I think that this is going to make, you know, it's going to be like for, I think, like 18 units, 22 units. Now, of course, it could be in Hyde Park. We heard from Hyde Park residents worried about those big old homes kind of off of, you know, Hyde Park Square, you know, instead of a single family, it's a four family now. And so there was a lot. There's concern. That's where the concern kind of creeps in, is the character of our, you know, our streets going to change, our neighborhoods going to change. North Avondale has a lot of the same concerns.
So if I were to kind of put the controversy into two buckets, that would be bucket one, that lifelong residents of those neighborhoods like it the way it is. They're worried about, you know, everything from declining property values to just changing the face of the neighborhood because more people are there, less parking, you know, more renters versus
everything
homeowners.
Comes down to parking, Pearl. The city budget came out and it does really, it adds like parking meter enforcement and everything and making more money from parking. And it's like the thing I've heard the most about all the things in the city budget. Parking is just, in Cincinnati, parking's a thing.
So there are groups.
But bucket two, what's bucket two?
Bucket two, I would say, are people who are saying, whoa, 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 where did this come from? You guys meaning the city, you didn't seek input. You didn't hold, you know, informational sessions. All of a sudden, you know, this gets rubber stamped through the committees and in a week we're going to be voting on this and I have no opportunity to weigh in. That, I think, is the second bucket of why this is making headlines and making controversy. The mayor has said, has called BS on that. He said, we have had community level meetings for input. This has not been, you know, this has been a very transparent process. And he's sort of the mind that now all of a sudden people are paying attention to it, but it's not because they haven't been transparent. Would you agree with the mayor's reaction to that criticism?
Yes and no. They did do a lot of engagement. They held meetings. They have been talking about it. But they didn't do engagement in the traditional way that's done in Cincinnati. And it's very frustrating to people. Their engagement involved, come to our meeting, come to my Zoom, come to, I'm going to have a special session and tell you all about it on a Saturday. Come to me. When we have a community council structure, and that can be debated. Is that the best structure to have all these community councils? But no matter what, we do have it. And traditionally, the people already are who super care about these things are involved in their community councils and go to the meetings and already are putting a lot of time into that path of things to know about things. And they didn't go to the community councils and people are very mad about that. And so it's almost like how they did it. I do agree with him that they did do it, but you had to make the time to go to the secondary structure and not the way you're already volunteering, the way you're already involved in the city, if you really do care about these things. And so I see the frustration. Now, I will say it did result in the longest planning meeting that they've had. That's kind of the planning commission put that moniker on it. It was 7 hours.
Wow.
They flew by. Honestly, the speakers were interesting and we heard from many different neighborhoods. We heard from both sides of the issues. The most interesting thing out of it is that it broke down. You would think that it would break down into rich neighborhoods and poor neighborhoods, as many things do in this city. And not poor. Let's call them less wealthy. I don't like to use the moniker poor neighborhoods, but neighborhoods that struggle more. So there is that divide here. It broke down into young and old. Young people really spoke out in favor of this, of this is the kind of homes they want to live in. They feel like this is how they're going to want to live. And it was less about, oh, it's going to be cheap housing. And it was like the kind of housing. They don't want to take care of yards. This is
right. If they've chosen the urban lifestyle, they don't want the overhead that comes with owning a traditional home. They want transportation options. That's why this plan is kind of stacked,
so lined up against you. Honestly, right, yeah. And I really can't.
No, that makes a lot of
this
sense.
This is the most place I can really offer some sort of opinion, because I can't really put that in a story, but that's kind of what it seemed like to me.
No, that's very fascinating. So my final question on this is, and this might be oversimplifying it, but the reasons for doing this that the mayor has articulated involve making sure that we are not a city where you have to be rich to live. He wants affordable housing options. He wants to acknowledge that we have a lot of renters, and so we need some in our neighborhoods if they're going to stay thriving and grow, and we're going to continue to grow. We have to have this plan. And so I don't think anybody fundamentally would say, oh, affordable housing is a bad thing. I think the issue you get is the classic NIMBY syndrome.
That's definitely happening in some parts of this, for sure.
Yeah, not in my backyard.
Yeah.
Like, I love the idea, but not next to my house.
I have to say, this is not about affordable housing. The mayor is on the record as saying that. That is a whole different thing. The Affordable Housing Trust Fund.
But he has said, if we don't do this, no one will be able to afford to live here.
He has. But affordable and like what anything new that a developer is going to put money in are two very different things. Because right, it's so expensive to build.
We're not talking about housing
For people who make like the poverty level kind of money,
right?
Guided by the federal government,
where the rents are capped and their funding is supplemented.
But the idea,
we're talking about just someone who doesn't want to drop $500,000 on a house. They would rather rent a 2-bedroom condo or buy a 2-bedroom condo. Or
I will say, in Reggie Harris, one of the architects of this plan, from his days in development, has said this is a 10-year plan. He's like, next year you're not going to see something different. The year after you're not going to see something different.
That's the other thing. The it's not like this passes and then
it's a free for all.
I live in Mount Lookout and I like my little neighborhood, and I wake up the next morning and all of a sudden it's changed. This is going to be a long transition to where the city leadership thinks we are heading, I think.
So, I mean, I do expect it to pass. Look for some stories. So next Wednesday, fifth, I think, is the vote. And then we'll do some more reporting before then on where things stand. Some people are waffling on it. It does seem like it has the votes to pass, though.
All right. And with that, let's shift into special guest time.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I'm happy to welcome Paris.
So excited to be here.
Thank you for joining us
Absolutely.
Today.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like we've been writing about Paycor a whole bunch. So I feel this was the perfect week to do on the heels of the big announcement that Paycor was going to come into the urban core and move into the Saks building. As much as I miss the makeup counters there, it does need a new life and a new purpose. And you guys are going to take the lead on that.
Yeah, we're super pumped. You know, it's been, it's no secret how much I love working for Paycor. And what's been really exciting over the last couple of years in particular. So we went virtual first in 2020, really early, actually, before a lot of companies were doing that. And we've remained virtual first. And so what that really means is the majority of our population is able to work from where they want and where they need to work. What we've continued to see is we've loved being in Norwood. There have been so many wins in getting to be a part of that community. The way we use the building is just fundamentally different now.
And it was a big building.
It's a huge building. And I go in almost every I go in almost every day. I need a little like
structure,
work, home separation for myself. And I do enjoy my drives into the office. But what we've had the chance to learn over the last couple of years is how we're actually using the space. And so it's so exciting to start to kind of rebuild this new home with the way that we use the space. So with customers, for board meetings, for our big company events where we do have employees come in for. So instead of kind of redesigning the space that we have to work for us, we get to design something that will really, really, really enable us to use the space to the best of our ability.
So this is your wheelhouse, like what retention of employees Absolutely. And then the software that all employees need. That's the key to what Paycor is. But you are a leader in knowing what people want. So what are some of the things about the space that are going to be special?
I think there's so many things. So one thing we hear from our employees all the time, and I swear it's like, you know, we feel like we're re-voting, but they always say, we love virtual first, but we also miss seeing people and we miss the connection. And so what I think, what I hope our employees will be, you know, surprised and delighted by is the amount of intentionality going into spaces for that. Connection, learning, big team meetings, chances to celebrate, work through strategy workshops and the things that are really important for us to continue to be relevant for our customers. So imagine like literally starting with a white page and you can draw. This is what we want employees to see. This is how we want them to feel when they're in this space. This is what we want the lighting to look like. And not just cosmetic, right? Those things really matter in how easy it is to engage with technology, how easy it is to host virtual and hybrid meetings, but then how also easy and fun it is to come together, have fun, having fun along the way is one of our guiding principles. And this space will definitely scream all six of our guiding principles, but it'll feel fun.
I mean, I will say the space matters because we're like hybrid here.
Yeah.
But with one thing that we have found, I'm not just saying this because Pearl's here with me, is that we love each other and we're friends and that we have hotel
She's
desking.
Talking about our employees. Not, I mean, I love
That's
Sherry.
True. But this is true. Our employees. Like, we're friends. And we have hotel desking.
I mean, we got an HR executive here. You got to be careful what you say.
That's true. Hey, no. All right. All right. But we have hotel desking. We could sit, you know, by who we're working with or who we want to see or who we need to gossip with.
That's
and
right.
It's a good, the light
Especially
in here.
For our newer employees, there's just, you could say this about a lot of professions, but this is, you know, in our business news, you learn so much from just being in the same room and hearing how other people do interviews or deal with sources who are being less than helpful, you know, being able to yell across the room a quick question, you know, tapping into the institutional knowledge that others have. I realized that our most recent hires, our less experienced reporters especially, were just missing out on such a key part of becoming better professionals. And that's just having that mentorship, not in an official way, but just that, you know, we're much better when we're together.
I mean, you're absolutely right. Think about, I'm not going to make any guesses, but what I feel fairly confident in saying is that my college experience was very different than the folks that have graduated over the last 5 years. And so for a lot of us that like did the office thing, having a break from the traditional office thing was great. But if you put yourself in the seat of 22, 23-year-olds who were literally forced away from people, being able to cultivate experiences where you to some degree can have the best of both worlds. So flexibility where you need it, but also a great place to come in, do your work, make meaningful connections. It goes a long way, both from an engagement standpoint, but I don't know about you. I do actually like love work. A lot of the reasons I love work is because of the people that I get to do it.
Like, I agree. And I love my work because I love covering City Hall too, as much as it's kind of crazy, but I do. That is a true thing about me. I like it.
Well, so so much to talk about, but I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No worries. I was going to say, I think all of that, though, it all has a place. Like, I feel like Lion King, right? Like, we all have our place in the circle.
Girl, you have to sing now.
Yeah. Which one are you going to do?
You know, not
he
to...
He has a very good voice.
Not really. Not to sidetrack us here, but one of the best new, like, fun things that you see at sport events at stadium is the Lion Cub or Lion King cam.
You know, yes, just like where the they're holding up the babies. Yeah,
so, oh, Savannah! And then people hold their babies up in the air and they get
I'm
on camera.
I'm always trying to get my husband to hold me up. I'm like, pick me up. Let's see, if we'll make it.
But anyway, we digress.
So, but let's talk. We do like to talk about our guests because you've been at other companies, big companies here in Cincinnati. So kind of tell us your path.
We need the Paris story. I'm always fascinated. You know, I don't know too many little kids when they're asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be an HR executive.
Yeah, so I didn't either.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
You know what I wanted to be was a child psychologist.
There's a lot that applies.
Exactly. And so here, this is like the truest story. Born overseas. My parents moved here, no pressure for, you know, for me to have a better life. Super blast, I'm in Cincinnati, so I have to say it, went to Sycamore School District, great experience. Went to Miami University, I was all in. That's like one thing about me, once I'm in, I'm all in on being a child psychologist. I think it was either the end of my sophomore year or the beginning of my junior year. So like a pivotal time in college. My favorite professor at the time pulled me aside and said, I got to talk to you about something. I think the thing that's going to make you a great child psychologist will ultimately kill you. And I don't think you should do it.
Whoa.
And I was like, well, that's
like a record scratch moment right there.
It was. And I legitimately, you know, at the time was probably more broken than anything else, because I respected this person. He said it with so much love and care. I also was like, what the hell am I supposed to do with this information? Like, now what do I do? And I really thought about it. I finished. I continued on.
What specifically about you did he?
My inability to not turn off like my feelings for people. So, you know, his biggest fear was that's hard stuff that you're supporting people through, especially being little ones. And you have to be able to turn it off. And he was like, I'm not sure you're going to be able to put it in a box. And so
in retrospect, you think he was right?
I think he was 100%.
Wow.
Right. This is going to sound funny, but it's not. I grind my teeth. Like, that's how I show stress. And my husband makes fun of me. He's like, stop talking about your teeth. Like, the kids always think they need their teeth pulled. But I have that now. Like, everything good, bad, or indifferent that I hear happening to a human being, much less, you know, an associate that I get to work with, I carry it.
It's difficult. We've had hospital CEOs and professionals on the podcast, and they talk about how many other things on top of, like, it all is in one. It's physical health, mental health. It all goes in. It's a lot.
It's a lot. And so I finished. I doubled. So I did psychology and I also did history because I always loved history. And then I realized later, you know, I started in sales. I worked for limited brands for a long time, which I absolutely loved. I feel like I grew up there. And getting to work with human beings every single day, I always say humans are every company's special sauce. I don't care what you do, what you sell, how you do it, but the people within, you know, your quote unquote walls are the ones that make a place special.
So you were in Columbus. Were you doing that in Columbus?
I had a different kind of college experience. So starting my sophomore year, I started working full time for Victoria's Secret. And they did so much for my career, teaching me about business and what it takes to, like, really make a business run. And so my junior year of college, I moved to Dayton because it was, you know, 45 minutes away from Columbus. It was 45 minutes away from Cincinnati. I got a lot of great experiences as, like, a 21-year-old that I always felt humbled by back then, but didn't realize how critical they were going to be for, you know, for the rest of my life. And so I never fully lived in Columbus, but got to do projects with headquarters and work in stores.
There still should be a Limited, and I'm very worried about Express because there also still should be an Express.
I agree. We were actually, she was like,
bankruptcy. No.
Well, and you're tall like I am. Like, nobody does the tall inseams like the Limited did.
Yes. No, that's never totally been the same. True.
I was just going to say
that. I'm sorry, Burl. It's just like a women's store. We're pivoting into a fashion podcast, which is what I really want to do.
I'll be back when you're done.
Well, you know, but it was so fun because you asked about career. I had that lovely experience at Limited. Then I went to US Bank and learned so much about, you know, banking and running a branch. And that took me into consulting, which is really, I feel like, when I fell in love with, like, what is the profession of human resources? Like, what does it mean? It used to be called personnel, I think, I'm not even sure it was called HR when I first started. And the feeling on the street was like, that's like the room that you went to get hired or fired. And there wasn't much more to it. And when I started in consulting, it was diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting. Back then, actually, diversity and inclusion, the E wasn't a part of the formula yet. And it was just fascinating to see how you can really be a part of a company's success by helping them focus in on their people and what their people need to be successful. And so being able to take that to Macy's and then 8451 and then Kroger. And folks ask me all the time, like, what's the company that you hated? I didn't. I loved every single place. I would go back to every single place.
Are companies that care about their employees.
They care so much about their employees.
Like, forward thinking things about what they're doing.
Absolutely. And I don't have one regret, albeit, you know, it'd be great if I could work at like all the places all at the same time. because the grocery industry is very different from retail, but also really similar. And banking is all about peace of mind and how you care for people in some of their best moments and in some of their worst moments. And now getting to, you know, work in HR at an HR tech company. I mean, you talk about having your cake and eating it too.
Does anyone have HR like in person anymore? Or is it all tech through the software the companies need to do other things?
Yeah. So here's what I love about HR tech. I think the whole purpose of HR tech is to take the tasks that can be done electronically and digitally away from the human beings so that the humans can do the stuff that's really important, right? Not that those administrative things aren't important, but how do you create connections? How do you help be a partner with somebody who wants to figure out what they're going to do next? How do you be a partner to help somebody work through, you know, an issue that they're having? We were kind of laughing about it, like the source or the coworker that you just can't get along with. Those are really important things at work. And HR professionals, you know, people teams is what we call them now, which I love because you're literally putting like the person at the center, can focus so much more of their time on those things that matter versus like what form to move through a process or through a spreadsheet. And it makes a difference.
And the people coming into the workforce now are used to computers and doing things only on technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a chief people officer now. We don't have a vice president of human resources.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And you see a lot of it. You see, people really transitioning to chief people officers or people in culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my hope is that we stop seeing the people skills as like soft skills. Because I'll tell you what, I have two kids. And if they're like assholes getting straight A's, that's not okay with me. Like the straight A's aren't going to get you through life. Being able to learn how to really listen and learn how to be humble and learn how to accept challenges with grace, but also celebrate yourself and others when you or they do or get a great job is like far more important than the grade you can get. You got to be a good human. And that's not a soft skill, I don't think.
I don't think so either. It's so important. Sherry knows I obsess about newsroom culture. corporate culture. You know, what you spend a lot of time at work, you know?
Yeah.
And we just don't, I like to say, you know, let's take our jobs very seriously, but let's not take ourselves too seriously. Do you find that it is more challenging now to recruit people?
Okay, we're all amongst friends. So
yeah,
here's what I think. I don't think it's more challenging. I think as technology gets better, people are smarter. Like, who would have thought you would have bought a car out of a vending machine, right? I don't know about you, but no. My first car certainly was not purchased in that way. But the reason that we can do that is because there's so much information. And I think we some folks might see it as hard. What I think it is companies that have clear vision, clear value propositions around who they aren't going to have a hard time bringing people in, because you're not cultivating something for one type of person or one type of generation. You're remembering that your company is your company with its very clearly communicated goals and objectives. It feels a certain kind of way to work there. And when you're really truthful about that, people can see what's truthful, and then people can see through the garbage. So what I think it is that people need to be smarter and proud about who their company is, what they do, what success looks like there. We really openly talk about at Paycor, you know, what was good last year is going to be like, okay, next year. We owe it to ourselves and everybody that we serve to be better because we had the experiences that we had before. And that comes with a certain type of, like, you've got to be relentless. Okay can't be good enough. And if people know that, they'll know if that's the right place for them, or maybe it's not. And that's okay too.
So let's go back to the move downtown to the former Saks department store building. I was curious, what's going to end up there? You know, is it going to be more condos? Is it going to be, you know, are they going to cut it up and have a first level restaurant? You know, I wasn't anticipating a new corporate headquarters there, but I think it's very cool. Was Paycor actively looking for a downtown presence? Is that important to the company?
Yeah, you know, for us, it all goes, I'm sure you're going to be wickedly surprised. It was really centered in the employee experience. Like, when we think about what our employees are telling us they want, what they miss, what's helpful, and what we found is the Central Business District had a lot of that to offer. There's also a buzz, right, between 5th Third, 8451, lots of folks, Kroger, doing things that are tech focused. Being able to bring our folks down where there's also other people in the vicinity focused on much of the very same things, albeit for different reasons, was so important. And I just think the city's done such a great job of adjusting to what COVID did to the workplace, and then creating experiences. So I don't know if you all have been to like Five Iron right across the street from where we'll be. It's a great place to do company get-togethers in a super meaningful way. Being so close to the airport, having so many hotels around, because again, we're virtual. So oftentimes when people are coming in, they're not coming in from Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. They're coming in from Arizona and from Florida and from Texas.
And they're seeing our city
too.
That's
right.
And this is going to be such a great spot. Like, it's going to be almost like marketing for downtown. Right? It's overlooking Fountain Square. It's by those companies for sure, but it's over, and it's going to have a balcony. Like that, like the rendering, I was like, it has a balcony.
And it's going to be fire.
Where it is, like for the opening day parade. Oh, and like, this is going to, it's something.
I mean,
it's
going to be really special, though?
And it's so ugly now, and it doesn't change that much. It changes just enough with the kind of space you want to have.
Totally. And I mean, I always say, like, good vibes only. It's not, you know, I read it on a bracelet or something, but like, think about it. Like, think about the days a decade ago, when the opening day parade experience was just so different. I know for a fact, 8451, maybe not a decade, 8 years ago, it was like overflowing with associates on the street. You can see people up on their balcony watching the parade. It's just such a special place to be prideful about, you know, the city that we get to be a part of. And then, you know, everybody obviously knows the Bengals are a great partner of ours, but so is FC and so are the Reds. And so we do a lot of events there too, because we want to support and be a part of those communities. And you're just close to everything here.
So I did want to talk a little bit about the stadium, because almost 2 years ago, I mean, that was just, and that was national news. And it was like the last NFL stadium without naming rights, except Kansas, I think, Kansas City. 2 years ago now, but pretty much. And no one ever thought that it would change. It was Paul Brown Stadium. And so that was just such a huge announcement.
It was.
What is the benchmark? What does Paycor get out of it? Other than, I mean, obviously we can see it in our skyline. Is that the main thing, or what is it?
Yeah, no, there's so much intentionality. So we do a ton of research when we think about our marketing and branding spend, right? And one of my favorite ways into that was when we originally did the Pac-12 partnership. So we looked at who watches those games, what industries are those people in, what types of degrees did they graduate with, what kinds of industries are people working in. And it was the same with the partnership with the Bengals, is really thinking through what's the reach, what's the opportunity and the potential for the reach. And then I can't be here and not say, you know, when we talk about empowering leaders to build winning teams, there's such a natural, there's a lot of connection, but there's such a natural sports connection too. And they're amazing experiences that we can provide for prospects, potential customers, and then also associates. The partnership with the Bengals and the NFL creates opportunities for us, not just here at Paycor Stadium, but for NFL games across the nation. And so it really allows us to connect with our customers and prospects in a way that we just weren't able to before.
Tim Elsbrook, the regional VP of Fifth Third, he was on our Future of Downtown panel that we did, gosh, a year ago now, talked about their plans to bring more of their workforce downtown for a lot of the reasons that you said. But he also sort of layered on, you know, you're coming at from a people's first perspective, but he also layered on sort of that civic responsibility element to it as sure. well, which if you just take a step back, let's say 5 years, you have no Paycor presence in the Central Business District to speak of, and almost a quiet, unassuming company, you know, growing, you know, a national player, but still kind of quiet. What a difference, mm-hmm. you know, now 2024, naming rights to an NFL stadium, great visibility on all these nationally televised games, you know, and now a very prominent downtown headquarters. Mm-hmm. Would you also say that there's an element of we need to step up and be part of this downtown renaissance as well?
Absolutely. You know, you asked me earlier around, is it harder to hire people? What we saw on job applications after the name went on this amazing view that you all have right here on the stadium, I've never seen anything wow. like it in my career. Like, our teams were freaking out. You know, roles that we would maybe get 700 applicants for, we were seeing 1,000, 1,200. We were having moments where we had to turn opportunities off so that we could make sure we were sifting through what was there and then turning them back on again. So you think about that buzz, and then the buzz that's created when you're in the, remember we used to say like the heart of it all, like when you're right. in the heart yeah. of the city. It's like,
I think we're saying that again now, right?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, that
I do. I mean, like, how can you not love? How can you not love that? But yeah, it's like it's such a great opportunity for so many reasons, and then getting to be a part of, I think, what's just been like a continued progression of Cincinnati and the Central Business District is, can't not be excited about it.
All right,
next, I know, year, we're running, it's going to be a year.
It's going to be a year, yes.
But I want to shift back to your role as, you know, leading HR for a company. You also, as I was researching for this podcast, I noticed that you're a contributor to Forbes as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Weighing in on all things HR. What is currently one of the challenges that you think American companies are facing from a people perspective?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is number one, engagement. And the reason for that is, and I think part of this is because of technology. Think about how many times you say, that was great, that was awesome. But when you reflect on it, it was like good, right? But we call it great and we call it awesome. And the reason I always use this example is, words really matter to employees. So if you're telling an employee that the work that they're doing is great all the time, when actually what the work is doing is good, they're like, shoot, well, they're treating me like I'm good. I could probably get something great somewhere else. And I think helping employees to see, hey, this is what good looks like. This is what great looks like. Every now and then, this is what like exceptional feels like, creates a trust and transparency very different from what we've had the opportunity to like really engage with before. And I think being able to show people true value, not sugarcoating things, not pretending like telling somebody the truth is like a tough conversation. I say all the time, if I walked in here and my fly was down, or I had like coffee or lipstick on my teeth and you all didn't tell me, and then I leave and go to the bathroom, I'm gonna be like, I hate those guys. Like, I just sat across from them.
And it's hard to say those things though.
But why?
It's like, true.
That's, yeah, no, that's, but like, fascinating. Why? Do you want to walk around with,
no,
stuff on,
I want
your
people
teeth?
To tell me.
100%. And you know, it's the same at work.
That's refreshing to hear, because I'm a direct person. And when I'm with my HR partner and we're managing through a difficult situation, I'll be like, can I just say, like, I wouldn't say this, but like, this sucks. This needs to be fixed, right? You know what? No, we can't say that. We're very cognizant to be professional, supportive, you know, follow the steps of progressive discipline and everything like that. To such an extent, I feel sometimes we're almost doing a disservice if we would just be more direct, because I personally want to be dealt with in a direct way. I don't want somebody not telling me my fly is down if my fly is down.
That's exactly right. And here's, I think, what the... I agree with you. Here's what I think we have to remember. You can't... I'm trying to make it into a fun example. If I talk to my husband one way all the time, and then one day just decided to like really lay it on him in a different way, he'd be like, what the F just happened, right? That would be like a very natural reaction. However, once you're in a cycle with somebody and they actually know who you are and they know that your direct style comes from the heart of it all, like it's coming from a good place, it doesn't feel direct or mean or like, oh, he just stunned me by saying that. But we have to do the work to build the relationship. So when I think about my team, I have such a fantastic team. I don't think there's one of them that I talk to the same way that I do the other one, not because I'm not like a genuine and authentic person, but sometimes I can tell by people's face, like,
well, you got to read the room.
That's exactly, you have to read the room. But we also have to do the work to have the credibility. I love my boss so much. He could call and yell at me, and I would take it as, number one, he knows I can take the feedback. Number two, you should also see it as like, I'm a space where somebody can have a very human emotion and we can work through it. But if we didn't have a good foundation of like being familiar with each other, being comfortable and trusting each other, that could feel like very debilitating. And so I think we have to, like, going back to my banking days, like, we have to put in the deposits so that when it's time to have a conversation that feels tougher, the person on the receiving end isn't like, Sherry said that to me because she's a jerk. She said it to me because she cares about me and she cares about my future and she doesn't want my presentation going to X, Y, and Z looking like garbage. She's trying to make sure that I'm like presenting myself with my best foot forward. You can't just do that though without developing a relationship with somebody.
I agree with this.
I agree with that. I'm like, this is so interesting to me. I mean, I manage a lot of people, so you're probably not surprised at that. But I'm fascinated by you being an advocate for being direct.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, maybe I'm throwing my own HR support system under the bus. No. Sometimes I feel that's the opposite. Like HR is telling me not to be direct. Like I have to do it this way. I have to be cognizant of, you know, I remember, I don't know if I don't think it came through Gannett Corporate Communications, but I might've been reading like a business magazine in an airport where the article was how to manage the millennial. And it was all about, and I was like, this is offensive to me because one, it's treating that generation as a monolithic, so everybody's right. Had the same experience or whatever. I am all about understanding, like, you know, this person, they, you know, they just want to be left alone and do their work and they don't need a pat on the back. They just want, you know, where this person, they really thrive off of feedback, good or bad.
Absolutely.
You know, like, you know, and you have to be cognizant of that if you're a good leader. I don't think so. The long way of saying, do you think that we spend too much time trying to understand a generation and how they're different from the one before? Because really, we're just all different.
I do. I think it's garbage because people are humans. And if you actually like look at the science behind why we talk about generations, it's through lived experiences people have had. And now we're getting really cute with it. We're like, there's these millennials, but they're different from these millennials. And they're different because, like, I don't know, I should probably know this, but I think the span of millennials is like, I'm going to be sarcastic, 12 to 40. Well, those freaking life experiences are
it's really different. It's the largest generation since the boomers.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's gigantic and there's no way you can generalize that.
You're sandwich in between and nobody cares.
And there's like these experiences that buckets of people have either because of what was going on around them during their formidable times, or like if you're 12 years old, I don't know, you're trying to figure out how to convince your parents to have Snapchat versus if you're on the other end of millennials and you're like, what about 529s? Like you're just thinking about very different things. And so I think how you want and need to be treated is more dependent on what you're saying, like what's important to that person. And I think we make working with and alongside and for people harder than it needs to be. I think the best way to start any conversation about anything is like, how did you think it went? You'll be so surprised. People will be like, that sucked. I blew it. I didn't prepare. This is what happened. And they are like helping you have the conversation that you need to have. I think we do too much delineation between direct has to be mean, soft is kind. That's garbage. If you're trying to be kind and you're trying to be helpful, regardless of like if you're being direct or not, you're going to get to a good space if you start from a place of like understanding and connection. If you're going to walk in a room and tell a whole bunch of strangers they're ugly, they're probably going to be like, right back at you.
Right.
If you do it and the person's like, oh, he really doesn't want me wearing this shirt because it's just not going to work. You see that as like, you're telling me I have spinach in my teeth, versus I'm a terrible person.
Gotcha. Sherry, do I get the last question?
Absolutely. Although I will say Burl does is like really so many of you, I know, I mean, Burl's job is journalism.
Yeah.
And like what you see is our content and that's like a big part of his job, but he also does have to manage all of us and we're a little bit high maintenance because if you go into journalism, you have a personality.
I think we have a big personality.
So there's a lot of big personalities.
Any profession that you would call a, calling, you know, where people, it's so passion. Baked into their identity is different than, you know, a job where, you know, someone might jump from, you know, this job to that job or whatever.
So he's like, really processing it. Then the other thing I'll say, and I'm going to let him have the last question, is that Burl is wearing a very fashionable shirt. Getting back to notice. Our fashion podcast.
I did.
It's been the talk of the newsroom today. So no one is going to tell Burl he's not wearing a good shirt today.
I did.
It's podcast guest day. So I try to not wear a t-shirt or something like that.
The pattern, I did. I noticed it immediately. Oh, there's also stripes.
I can never wear the shirt in here again. I didn't know the newsroom today.
I mean, you can wear it again. Just don't wear it tomorrow because now we're all going to know that it's a repeat.
All right. So here's my question. Do you have your crystal ball?
No.
Well, get your crystal ball.
I got it.
All right. Okay. How long is hybrid going to be with us? Is it just the way things are now?
Or? I think it's just the way things are. Now, if you would have asked me this in the beginning part of 2022, right? Like if the COVID experience just would have lasted a little less, honestly, I think my crystal ball would show something different.
Yeah.
I think the muscle memory has just changed so much that unless there's another big something that fundamentally changes it again, and we've got to again reshift how we work, how we live, I think it is what it is. I hate calling it the new norm, but I really believe in muscle memory. And I think after we hit that like 18-month, 2-year point, the muscle memory has just changed.
I would agree exactly with that timetable too, because I think as the first wave was winding down, you saw companies, ours including, asking market leaders to put together back to office plans. Like, give people time to get back into it. We can't just, you know, throw the switch. But by this date, we should be 100% back to the office. And then you had that other surge. Mm-hmm. And then the whole narrative changed where it was like, okay, there are benefits to working remotely, the hybrid schedule. So come up with something that makes sense for your team, which
That's
I thought
right.
was a lot better than everybody back to work by this date, which is where exactly we were planning for. And then that other surge happened.
100%. I mean, Kroger was different. I was at Kroger, which was, I got to tell you, so many blessings, but like what a blessing to get to work for that company during that time, right? In our
huge
industry.
Problem solver for what we needed.
Yeah, but we were like, I told my whole team, I was like, just plan for 2 weeks. Like, we have to model the way. Y'all can't come back in the building while it's shut down, but it's only going to be 2 weeks. And then it was like 4 weeks. And then it was 5 weeks before we got like our essential worker status. And then it was creepy. Like, I was like, are there ghosts here now? I don't know what's happening. And the muscle memory just changed. And to be clear, there are jobs that you have to be in a physical location for. We have them. Full stop. And I think we have to be truthful and embrace the reasons we're asking people to come back. And all the reasons are fair. Is it because we have a responsibility to be in the city and ensure that it continues to flourish and lunches and happy hours and events do that? If that's what it is, say it. Don't make up like a weird reason why we have to be here. I think human beings do really well when they know the truth, even if it's not the truth that they want to hear. People are okay.
All right. I didn't see the podcast really going in this direction today, and I'm so glad that I did. I actually follow a lot of like HR stuff on TikTok. Once you have one, then it's like bunches. It's a whole side of TikTok about this. So it was a good conversation about where our work lives go. Thank you so much.
Thank you all so much for having me.
I'm so excited you'll be our neighbor, kind of.
I know. We'll be right here.
All right. Well, as people probably picked up on, I could have talked about these kind of issues with Paris all day long because it's so fascinating.
Well, the workforce is changing and she's really at the center of it. And she's an HR superstar that she knows. So we had the perfect, we had to talk about all of those things. I thought we would just talk about Paycor, but those issues affect all of our lives.
All of our lives. And especially, you know, you talked about my job is journalism, but I got to tell you, most of what I do during the day is administrative people type stuff, you know, as a leader of a team. And so it's fascinating to me. Could have gone all day, but here we are at the last segment of the podcast. And it was a big, big That's So Cincinnati weekend. And you did all the things, didn't you?
I did. Well, it was Taste of Cincinnati. So I went down one day.
Okay.
Mostly because I'm on a diet, or I wouldn't have went down every day. Because there was so much to see. It was on Fifth Street. And there were just all these different sections. I thought it was really well done this year of like offshoots of how things were. And then you could kind of like sit.
What do you mean offshoots?
Like down Broadway was where.
Oh, so instead of locked on Fifth Street, you could like go up Broadway. There's like little places to go.
I think it alleviated the crowds a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But my diet only permitted one day.
One day a Taste. Well, I missed it completely, Sherry. And I'm so bummed.
But you were doing something important.
Yeah, it was graduation weekend for many, many high schools, including Sycamore High School, the home of the Aviators, or the Aves. So, yeah,
those,
I was tied
big
up.
Moments, yeah.
Yeah,
you had to
we
be
had
there.
We had the kind of family grill out on Saturday, and then Sunday was graduation at the Cintas Center. So that was a lot of graduation type stuff this weekend.
We're not there yet.
You're getting close.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it'll happen quickly.
We're just glad ninth grade is over.
You know. It's a big accomplishment freshman year getting
it
through
is,
freshman
and it was
year.
A learning curve in a good way, but so much more work. And like, we're all like,
yeah.
Of course, the city's like ramping up like all of its stuff because I need a breath. And it's like, no, it's a million things for me.
So we were talking in our news meeting, some of the Taste feedback. Now, Taste is a fantastic event. It's worth coming down. Some people noted that some of the items were priced a little high compared to past Tastes, and Keith Pandolfi, our food writer, was talking about it's just like restaurant food. It costs more to be in the food business. But also hearing that some of the booths drifted away from the Taste concept, where maybe you spend $5 or $6 for a small sample. So you could, like, let's say you spend $25 or $30 and you can sample five different things, that some of the booths were serving large portions. So it was more like of a commitment. Did you see some of that? And what's your Taste approach, Sherry? How do you tackle Taste of Cincinnati?
Well, I meant to just taste like a lot of little things, but I made a big mistake right out of the gate. My very favorite thing that I had was a Cuban sandwich from Finley Markets. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. Cucabanas, the bread.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so good. But it was a full half of it. Not as big as like a Cuban sandwich that you would really think of, but it was a half of a full sandwich. And it was so good, I ate it. Well, whoops, because then I needed to, or wanted to eat like a lot of other different things, but it was so good, I ate it. And so it really just needed like a bite or two.
Right.
But then I learned, then once I did it, then I was like, okay. So I did throw some food away, because then I was like a bite here, a bite
sure,
here.
Sure, yeah, it puts pressure on you. Yeah, I gravitate towards the little taste items when I go. And I'm gonna definitely go next year because I've really bummed out I didn't make it down there, but I was busy. I mean, I had my own Taste of Cincinnati going on because we had like 30 people coming Saturday for a grill out. And you'll have to tease Lauren about this, but I made potato salad ahead of time.
Okay. And
I was out grilling, right? And she was in charge of putting all the food out inside.
Oh, no.
She did not put the potato salad.
That happens sometimes at parties.
And we had plenty of food and people brought stuff, but I stayed up late making that just to get it.
But then you had it yourself for Memorial Day, right?
Right, because we had an impromptu Memorial Day gathering to grill up the rest of the stuff that we didn't use and everything like that. So I was
teasing friend of the podcast, Brendan Call, who's the
CEO of the chamber, right?
That puts on Taste. So much work. Really kudos to everyone, especially with the little weather blip. And, you know, I ran into employees there that I know, and like point of sale for beer went down, but that she had it fixed in a second. And it's just so much work. But anyway, I was kidding with him yesterday. I was like, do you just put all the leftover food in like your coffee alley for Monday? He's like, it doesn't work that way.
I don't think it works that way.
Well, I already did get a survey as like somebody who was at Taste of like what I thought of it and everything. So they're on it of like what worked, what doesn't.
Yeah.
And like,
no, it is I would say world-class food event. It is,
Now, because I tend to go to Finley Market and get the same things all the time, but
right.
Now it's like, no, I have to get this. Well, that's what I like about it. I mean,
there's restaurants and places that I had never been to that I want to try. And yeah, I mean, I would have never known. We're going to go back like 3 or 4 years into the podcast now. If not for Taste of Cincinnati, I would have never had Godsmack. Not Godsmack, but Godsmack. Pickles, macaroni and cheese.
They were there and I didn't get any of it.
With the Grippos on top. Yeah.
Next year.
Oh, yeah. So could go for some Godsmack right now. And it's not even noon. I'm weird, aren't I? Yeah. Okay.
I know what you're talking about, though. Sure.
All right. Go, Sherry, go.
Thank you for listening to That So Cincinnati podcast, a production of The Inquirer and Cincinnati.com.
That So Cincinnati is sponsored this week once again by Cincinnati.com, the online home of The Enquirer. If you'd like to sponsor an episode listened to by thousands each week, email me personally at blove@cincinnati.com. Lines form on my face and hands. Lines form on the left and right.
That So Cincinnati was produced today by Phil Didion. Lisa Gillespie books our guests. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and share us with a friend.
And finally, if you value local journalism, please consider a digital subscription to The Enquirer. Just click on subscribe at the top of cincinnati.com. I'm in the middle of life. I'm a boy and I'm a man.